What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back. This is the Deep Corner, episode 29. I'm Rob St. Clair and a very special guest, a late addition to Team LVC's roster for next weekend, outside hitter Cody Kessel. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
I was happily surprised to get the news that you were going to be around playing for LVC next weekend from Chris Hosley. It's cool to get you on and talk a little bit about it. We'll get into later how you got connected with Team LVC, and it can be assumed that it was from when you were on the East Coast studying at Princeton. But before that, you've got a really interesting kind of volleyball backstory, one that I can't think of anyone else who's even kind of similar. You're in Colorado right now at the house, or in the area at least where you grew up, and boys volleyball, I don't know how it is now, but back when you were in high school, just didn't exist. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we there was kind of a club, boys volleyball, that would, about 20 teams that would try and put together kind of an unofficial state championship. But I was playing lacrosse. I played 8 years of lacrosse, so freshman, sophomore, and junior year of high school. There was the same season. So my lacrosse team was kind of bad. We would always lose before playoffs, so I would then join one of the local high schools for the volleyball playoffs because I played grass growing up and liked the sport, and so I would just hop on a team for the playoffs in state. And 1 year we got third or something, but yeah, there just wasn't so much. And you had to play, like a lot of places probably, you had to, when you were younger, we played against the girls, and then when you got a little bit older, 16, 17, 15, 16, 17, you just got to start playing against the men.
Yeah.
So you start, you know, men's B, men's double B, work your way up. And actually a good way to learn, you know, you learn learn pretty fast, not playing age group stuff too. So that actually was ended up being kind of a blessing in disguise when I got to Princeton. I've been playing against men for a lot of years, you know.
That's a good point. It's I've talked to a handful of guys on the show who have come up kind of similarly, like instead of like the whole kind of, I would call it white collar, playing like junior club from age 14 and like playing really competitively in tournaments and all this forever, or the alternative is what you kind of have done, you know, just throw yourself into the adult volleyball universe and play where you can and see where it takes you. And in your case, it's taken you quite a few places. But it has to be that your first exposure of the game was from your dad. Is that correct?
That's definitely correct. Yeah. My dad is a international ambassador of the sport and has been for about 35 years. Started working at USA Volleyball in the 80s, you know, one of the first eight or nine, maybe the first five or six official employees. And it's just been doing everything to grow the game. So he's been the director of beach, disabled, coaching education, the grassroots for decades now. So of course I knew about the game growing up. I grew up in Colorado Springs where the USA Volleyball offices are, and for a while the Olympic Training Center, the national teams were training there. So growing up, I would go into the gym occasionally and see Reed, Pretty, Clay Stanley, and those guys just became my heroes. And a lot of the members of the sitting team when they started to train. Just got to know a lot of those guys personally, and that was just really special. And then my dad would go do clinics every summer, and he would take my sister and I along, and we were just super lucky to see the U.S. and the world through volleyball. And then I started playing with him grass doubles. There's a Father's Day tournament in Vail, and it's father-son and father-daughter. So I was 11, I started playing father-son with my dad on the grass in beautiful Colorado, and yeah, just kind of got hooked from there, and pretty much played grass every summer. And then in Colorado, you know, you transition to the beach when you can, once you get good enough.
Yeah.
Once you know, get too good at grass, and it becomes so yeah, that's kind of the general path. And I played 1 year of club volleyball full time my senior year when I decided to fully go for volleyball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, John Kessel is a name that most of the people in the volleyball world will definitely know. And a congratulations to your dad on his like amazing career that just ended in retirement, which, I mean, we can talk about this a little bit later, but a slightly earlier retirement than he maybe have planned, because the USA Volleyball and all the volleyball organizations have been hit really hard by this pandemic thing. And I wanted to get to that a little bit later about like what our leagues got going for it. But that is like growing up with a dad who has gone everywhere in the world with the sport. Did you feel pressure towards the sport of volleyball? Were you ever pushed towards it, or did he just kind of let you find it on your own? I've always found that to be
really
interesting.
Really good question. He was so good and almost to a fault about not pushing me into it. You know, he's just the biggest fan and helped me fall in love with the game indirectly, or there was never any pressure. And it was like I said, now that I'm a professional volleyball player, looking back, it's almost like, oh, I probably could have done more, or coached me earlier, or pushed me hard. All these things are still fun. But he just did a really remarkable job of that. And it was always, when we get done playing any sport, he was my soccer coach and my lacrosse coach for a couple of years too. And I tell people this all the time, because it was just this thing that stuck. And, so many parents will get in the car with their kids after the game, and, maybe they're hashing out the X's and O's, or, oh, you could have done this and that and the other thing. And that's helpful to some extent, but he would always just say, hey, I love to watch you play. And then it was up to me to, if I wanted to talk about X, Y, or Z, and bring that up. So he was just a really good fan in that way. And yeah, I got hooked late, maybe because of that a little bit too. It just came to the sport a little bit later. And saying I was playing lacrosse for 8 years and got hooked on that. And that was always the same season as volleyball. But yeah, about 17, I decided, hey, I think I can play at the next level and I want to keep going with volleyball.
Well, that obviously worked out pretty well, but I was wondering about how you get recruited to a school as big and as good as Princeton, having come from an area with almost no like formal competitive club volleyball. Because like coaches, when they're at recruiting, they're all at these like gigantic junior tournaments, like the SoCal one or the Chicago one or whatever, and they're looking like at club players for a few minutes at a time at most, and against good competition, just to get a sense of who kids are from a recruiting standpoint. How do you get noticed when you're playing in Colorado?
Totally. For me, a lot of it was the grades. You needed to kick butt in school. So that's my first message.
Ivy League, yeah.
Yeah. But the second thing is, a lot of people don't know this part of the story, is when I graduated high school, like normal, you apply and you get in. I wanted to go play out west. I didn't want anything to do with the East Coast, so applied to a bunch of schools out there, got into UCLA, got into Berkeley, got into Santa Cruz, was looking at playing D3, D2, club, D1 somewhere. Just couldn't afford the schools out there. They were just way too expensive for at that point in time. And I also wasn't fully like ready and mature. I was like 6'3", maybe 6'2", when I graduated high school.
You kept growing after the end of high school, man? Wow.
Crazy. Our family has grown. Like, the guys in our family just do that. And the full story is, my dad was doing a coaching clinic with Carl McGowan, the BYU legend. And my dad was kind of saying, hey, Cody wants to go play D1, but he's not really ready. I wasn't good enough at all yet, to be blatantly honest. I wasn't, 6'2", undersized outside from Colorado. No one's going to get a lot of love there. And
even if it's the son of John Kessel.
He said, just sit him out a year. Don't have him take any courses. Don't start his eligibility. Just have him. He goes, we sent them out 2 years. They go on their mission.
Good point.
And that's okay. And we were looking at it going, this actually might be a really nice thing, because we were looking at getting in-state tuition somewhere, going to junior college, doing the Marine Corps thing, anything to pay for school or figure out that kind of problem. And yeah, I'm the oldest in my family, first one to do the college thing. So we just didn't know. And ended up choosing this gap year. And so that year off, I was an intern with my dad. So I'd go in and help him with all these volleyball projects, the sitting volleyball, the Special Olympics, working that as an intern for him from about 9 to 3 every day. And I'd go coach the C squad high school team, and I coach club. And on nights and weekends I played. So it was full volley immersion for a year.
Sweet.
I sent out all the emails to recruiting coaches again saying, hey, I'm playing, come watch me play 18s club, the
JOs. Oh, because you were still probably allowed to do that because you weren't in college yet. That's interesting.
Yeah, and so I said, hey, I'm planning this gap year, but come watch me play 18s. And the coaches that were interested from that were Princeton, BYU, and USC. I went on a visit to BYU and loved it. Awesome campus, awesome volleyball, awesome school. And then I went out on my unofficial visit to Princeton, and shortly thereafter got an offer from Princeton. They have these things called likely letters. They don't have athletic scholarships. But
right.
Basically a guarantee of admission that's saying, hey, you're going to get in if you commit to this team. And it's kind of a no-brainer at that point. And I was able to afford, school is very, very affordable. So I was just lucked out, and it was just a great, great moment, just super lucky. I mean, just all these little twists and turns, and it's been a crazy journey since then, so.
Yeah, I was reading online. I did a little bit of research and found that you did do a gap year where you interned at USAV, and that's, honestly, that's genius, and that's something that nobody would have thought of. I'm really impressed that someone like Carl McCown would like recommend that as an idea to your dad, and it obviously worked out perfectly.
Yeah, and I just bring it up in that, I mean, a lot of people in Australia do it, or mm-hmm. it's more common in Europe to take it after high school before you go to university. I know things are so uncertain for a lot of people right now, and you know, it's an option. You know, you don't, again, if you don't start your, if you don't take any college courses yet, the NCAA usually
still finds you eligible. Yeah.
Say, hey, here's what I did that year. You know, I gave back to the world. Whatever you go do, you work to save up money, whatever you go do in that year, it's a fringe option, and it worked out for me really well.
And another year of athletic maturity before you start your eligibility doesn't hurt. And like you were saying, you kind of skyrocketed in height.
Yeah.
Huh. That's totally an option that anyone listening to this should totally think about.
Yeah.
So by the time you got to Princeton, now you're more ready than you were the year before. You start pretty much every match. You're playing a little bit opposite your freshman year, weren't you?
Yeah, I actually played opposite pretty much every year at Princeton. We didn't really have anyone who could kill a D-ball, brutally honest. And so I did some passing opposite for a couple years, but it was almost all opposite. And then my first year after Princeton, I got signed to an opposite contract in Switzerland, and they switched me to outside on that team. They said, hey, we like your passing level. You know, it was decent enough from the grass and beach I've been playing, and they needed that. And I was okay with that because I thought it was going to help me and maybe better chances for USA and moving forward as an outside hitter. So ever since that move in Switzerland, it's been the switch to outside. So
that is the exact opposite of the switch that pins usually make. Yes. Like usually people start off playing outside and they're like, oh, you can't pass the ball high enough at whatever level you're at the time.
Yeah.
Here, go to the right and just bang balls all the time. That's I can't say I've ever heard of someone doing the other switch. That's pretty cool.
It's been awesome, and it's been a huge challenge, you know, to then become a master passer, because that's what I want to do to be at the next level. And so I'm just so lucky that I've gotten to play this many years and continue to work on my craft every day and just keep getting a little better. And it's just been a fun challenge and a fun journey to do that.
I like to pick the brains of people that can play both pins into how they kind of approach them, both technically and mentally.
Sure.
Now, you're pretty much a full-time outside hitter now, but I'm sure if somebody were to throw you on the right side, you would not miss a beat and feeling comfortable over there. Like obviously the natures of the position are different. Like when you're playing left side, you have to do a lot more. You have to receive the ball. You're a back row option, hitting Bick, hitting left side, like high against gigantic blockers. And on the right, you're just like jumping high and hitting hard all the time. Mentally, how did you have to learn the outside hitter position in Switzerland and thereafter compared to how it was in college for you?
It's a good question, because I didn't have that many passing reps from Princeton. You just got to get into that serve and pass mental battle, and that's just such a huge chunk of our game. And so I actually enjoyed that challenge of, hey, you know, I want to take a bigger role in my team's success or failure. And that is on the pro side, we're so lucky because I can go and watch every server serve almost every serve they've served all season and be prepared in that way. And so that's a huge part of it, is from the mental side of this preparation of, you know, just doing everything you can to make sure you're prepared and so you can help your team win. And it's just that extra chess match that I enjoy a lot, adding into the whole game, the servers versus passers, for sure.
Well, everybody who watches or knows the game at a high level knows that the game pretty much comes down to the serve and pass battle. If you as a team win the serve and pass battle, if you're in system more than the other team, you're probably going to win the match, just because at the professional level, the offenses are so ridiculously good. So to learn the passing area of the game and to be serviceable, if not good, at that first contact, that's huge. That's everything for a team's success. And I bet you learned that really well in Germany this past year. I wanted to ask a lot about playing for the Berlin Recycling Volleys. That's a team that a lot of people worldwide are going to recognize. I'm fascinated by the German league because it's one of very few that doesn't have any foreign player limits. So you were on a team with a bunch of Americans, which was awesome. What was it like to just be surrounded by guys who had so much in common with coming from the U.S.? Because a lot of guys who go over to Europe from the U.S. don't have that luxury.
It was awesome. We had that whole crew of guys, not just the American guys, just a great group. And a fun history fact for those listening, the only other team to have five Americans was, I think in 2006 or 7, Hugh McCutcheon actually was over coaching in Austria. And it was Reed Priddy, I think Rich Lamborn. I'm going to forget the other three or four guys, but they had a team of five Americans in the Austrian league.
And that's then not fair.
We kind of reset the record this year with the five guys in Berlin. And yeah, it was just so great to be able to share so many experiences from college and stuff. And it was Kyle's first year overseas. JT was coming from oh gosh, he's gonna kill me. UAE or Dubai, somewhere in the Middle East. I'm not remembering which one. And it was just to have all those guys together. Banner's returning, Jeffers returning from Berlin, and I don't know what to tell you other than it was just a really special thing to also feel like, yeah, you're pushing for Berlin too. But seeing all these guys get better every day for USA was great.
Yeah, that's pretty cool to be surrounded by. Like, the just to give everyone the full names: Ben Patch, Jeff Jendrick, Kyle Enzing, JT Hatch, and you. And from schools all across the U.S., positions all over the place. But having all you guys on the same team was really fun for like me as a fan to follow along to. Because like, I don't care which European team it is, I'm going to root for the Americans. So that was a no-brainer. And then you had teammates like Nicolas Legoff from France. You had the legendary Sergei Grantkin setting for that team, which is crazy. Another question that I like to ask people who make the jump to Europe is the biggest difference from the NCAA level to like A1 Germany or even A1 Switzerland?
I would say just the serving level. You know, you have guys like Surzin come to NCAA and, you know, just crush everyone. And there's just, I don't know. And I couldn't tell you why. It's not that we don't practice serving over in the States, but there just seems to be a little bit higher level across the board. And it's also professional, right? A lot of these guys, they do what a lot of us did when they're 13 and they're playing against men. Mm-hmm. And that's the only speed of the game they know. And they kind of grow up in that sense faster than maybe we do, again, with the 14s, 15s, 16s level going forward. It's still volleyball. You know, volleyball is volleyball. So
good
there's
point.
A lot of there's probably more similarities than there are differences when you get over there. A lot of it's cultural and figuring out how they look at sport and how the different clubs in different countries approach training, approach weightlifting, approach even nutrition. I think it's all the kind of the other stuff off the court that is probably the bigger difference that people have to get used to and adjust to.
That's you're not the first person on the show to say that. Is it the kind of volleyball is volleyball idea, even across language and culture barriers? You know, if you know how to play, you get on the court and you play. Yeah. And another thing that I've noticed a lot in the last, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 years is that the NCAA men's level has had a big influx of very, very high-level international talent. Ohio State notably had a couple Frenchmen come over and help them win a couple national championships. Hawaii's had a bunch. BYU's had a bunch. Long Beach State has had a handful. Now that you've been over in Europe and have kind of gotten to see how athletes develop, like how the differences in like developing volleyball players between here and there, why do you think that the NCAA is becoming an attractive thing for good young European players, more so than maybe it used to?
Man, they're all about it. I mean, so Canada and the United States are basically the only countries that have school and sport intertwined the way that we do.
That's correct.
From NCAA all the way down. Mm-hmm. So if I'm talking to my young German teammates, a lot of them are going, hey, how can I get over to a university? Because the opportunity for them to study and play sports together is just this unique thing that they have to go to Canada or the States to experience. So it's this really coveted thing. They do, you know, they have to kind of navigate, figure out, they have to take the TOEFL, they have to take the SAT, they have to take all the American exams.
Yeah.
So it's kind of this big, for them, it's like can be kind of a big scary thing to kind of figure out of recruiting, you know, going over a new place. So there's probably a market for people to help those kind of players figure that out. I'm sure there's services that
Good
provide
point.
Something along that lines, because it is kind of this, even picture just as an American applying to college and then add in being a foreigner trying to do that, it's kind of there's a bunch of hoops you have to jump through, the eligibility center, et cetera, et cetera. But it truly is this coveted thing, and we just forget that, you know, we grow up with it, and all the way down through high school and elementary school, and in Europe and the rest of the world, it's school and sport. You know, they're figure out how to join your sport club, and you just have to figure out the two on your own. So we're really lucky in that sense. The other side of it, you're seeing the NCAA struggle with justifying it with the way the level of sports has gotten to. But it's just a uniquely American phenomenon that we have, student athlete.
That's exactly what I was just about to say. The NCAA is so uniquely American. It's such a uniquely American thing.
Yeah.
And I find it interesting, like the idea of a European 16, 17, 18-year-old going through jumping all the hoops to come over to the U.S. to play. From a volleyball, like a recruitment sense, it's actually very similar to what you guys have to do when you try to go to Europe to play professionally, just maybe a couple years later.
I hadn't really thought about that. Transparency barriers, tough. Sorry, keep going.
I've always been confused and interested in how, like, overseas recruiters can evaluate American talent, because like normalizing the skill levels between the two places has to be really hard. Like you can only see so much from a highlight reel of like guys bombing balls or hitting high hands or serving aces at whatever level they're at. But it has to be difficult to like really figure out from a highlight reel if a kid can like fit in the league that you're recruiting him for.
It's super tough. And that's where you have all these agents, and it's kind of like any job that you get, so much of that comes from personal connections. Mm-hmm. You know, some guy you trust, you played with, you know, knows the games, has seen this person or developed for a couple of years, and they give a call. So that whole network definitely plays a big factor in it. But other than that, it can be really tough. If there's people listening, the general thing is to get a couple of videos together, and you can start networking and sending out, you know, your basic info and CV of volleyball accomplishments, you know, height, weights, all, et cetera, touch, position, experience, but then just kind of two videos of you playing in real time. A lot of places are just going to want to see, or agents or people who want to help you just want to see your game if they can't see it in person somehow. So that would be like your first stepping stone if people are interested. And then a lot of it's just up to the networking and the people you know, and reach out to as many people as you can.
Yeah.
You know, there's resources out there for every league has a site, and you can watch their games or email their coaches. But yeah, it's this kind of this big hairy thing. You're going, oh, how do I go play in Europe or the rest of the world?
The thing about it is that it's actually more doable than it sounds.
Totally.
In a weird way. And I've had guys say that on the show before too. I had a guy who described, like, there are a lot of people now from the U.S. that are going to play in grad school and play in the U.K. and use that as a stepping stone to go overseas. There's a lot of ways to do it. It can totally be done. And it, like you were saying very well, it starts off with building a video and putting your name out there to as many possible people in as many countries as you can. And hopefully one of them sticks. And then and all of a sudden you're overseas playing professional volleyball.
Yeah. And you're right. There are so many opportunities for someone, especially if you just want to do it as a kind of an experience thing. You're not going to, maybe you get a few hundred, maybe a few hundred euro a month. Maybe they give you a place to stay, and that's pretty much it. You know, there's a lot of people that get to experience travel in Europe in that way through volleyball.
Yeah, not a bad lifestyle if you ask me.
Yeah.
So before we talk about LVC and like kind of looking forward towards next weekend when we're finally going to put some real indoor out on the floor again, I wanted to put you through this little set of quick, like, rapid fire questions I've been throwing at people lately. So just give me the first quick couple words that come into your head when I ask you this stuff. You ready?
Yeah.
All right. Early mornings or late nights?
Late nights.
Me too. Good answer. What's the best pregame, like, warm-up song or artist?
Drake.
Solid. What's the best day of the week?
Friday.
Stuff block or service ace?
Stuff block.
Best post-game meal?
Chicken and pasta.
Solid. What's the hardest position in volleyball?
Middle blocker.
I agree. I was in middle for years. What's your favorite jersey number?
5.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Favorite sports team, any sport?
Denver Broncos.
Sorry, I have a Packers flag in the back. You guys did beat us in the Super Bowl in the 90s, as I recall.
Yeah, I remember.
Favorite athlete?
Wow, that's really hard. Reed Pretty.
Great answer. That's such a good answer. I have to divert from the rapid fire to ask, what's it like to watch Reed Pretty, just walk into the gym and watch Reed Pretty just like be Reed Pretty when you're like 15 years old or whatever? Is that crazy?
Yeah, I mean, I still remember just like his raw athleticism, but anyone can see if you interact with him in any shape or form, just what a great guy he is. And just he continues to put out great content for people and just connect to the sport, and just the way he approaches mastery at such a high level. I just admire him a lot. And the way he's on the pier now too.
That's
so
crazy.
That's like,
we're gonna have to tag him in this on Instagram or whatever, so we make sure he sees you giving him the shout out.
Yeah.
All right. Back to it. If you had a superpower, what would it be?
Time manipulation.
Nice one. What sport are you the best at other than volleyball? Is it still lacrosse or is it something else?
Ooh. I'm actually pretty good at cornhole, if anyone wants a challenge.
Okay, yeah, we might be able to fit in some of that next weekend. Beach or mountains? You live in Colorado, I probably know.
Yeah, mountains.
Favorite color?
It's blue, pretty basic.
And what's stronger for you, loving winning or hating losing?
Loving winning, loving to play.
Okay.
Just the love of the playing. You can't control fully one or the other, so just getting lost in that moment and, doing everything you can do.
Yeah, that's a good answer. I'm really fascinated by it, the way people answer that question, because everyone's driven pretty hard by one of the two, or oftentimes both.
Yeah. It's both. There's definitely a double-edged. It's both. You can't have, It's a good question, though.
So you were telling me right before we started recording, like, how the heck you got picked up by Team LVC. The East Coast connection makes sense, Princeton being in New Jersey, of course, but it actually goes back a lot further than just Hosley texting you a couple days ago asking if you could play next weekend. What's your first exposure to those guys?
Yeah, I want to say, I think it was must have been 2012 or 2013, 2011, something like that. My coach, Sam Shreskud, always pushed me to go play adult nationals, and I had been doing that with teams in Colorado growing up, and had an opportunity to join Legion. And it was with Mark Burek, AJ Nally, Hosley, Lance, just a bunch of legends on that team. And they took me under their wing, and I got to play some opposite and played some really good volleyball that one year that we played together. And we were playing Loy's team, and we barely lost in the semis or something like that.
Hey, you're getting another crack at him next week, fortunately.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. So just a great group of guys, and I got to know them through that East Coast connection. And so since then, those have been my boys.
It's been a little while since you've played indoor in general, but it's especially been a while since you've played with those guys. When you show up next weekend, some of them you probably haven't even met in real life before. When you guys show up next weekend, what's going to be the key to like throwing together some team chemistry in a way that kind of looks like competitive volleyball, like so quickly?
I don't have like a one answer for you. You know, you just feel each other out and figure out what's working in a tournament like this when everyone's kind of coming together at once. So, you do have, luckily, I'm seeing those three kind of pool play matches, and then before you really have to turn it on and compete. So there'll be some time to figure it out. But I know those guys, they've been playing together so many years. They understand each other. So it's probably more me and some of the other guys as the new pieces that will kind of have to figure their way in.
Well, like you kind of said earlier, volleyball is volleyball, and you guys, I know that you guys get comfortable pretty quick, and I'm excited. Like, I'm the guy who gets on the mic and does the play-by-play for all the matches, so I'll be there, and I'm excited to watch all the matches and see like the level increase from Friday morning to Sunday, because I know that it will as the teams start to gel and figure each other out. I think that's gonna be cool to watch.
Yeah, for sure.
So, before we get you out of here, the sport of volleyball during the past several months with the COVID-19 pandemic has taken a huge hit. Every tournament canceled, like a lot of seniors' seasons cut short, some careers have ended. Nobody's been able to play like real competitive volleyball for a very, very long time. It's something that we've all been missing. And like we talked about a little bit, the USA Volleyball Organization has suffered because all of their events, like the junior events, big junior tournaments, and like high performance stuff where they get a lot of their income, just haven't been able to happen. So the whole volleyball world, and really just the world at large, is in this rough, unforeseen place of like uncertainty and not being able to do anything, and economic stress too. So with all that, and with your personal connection to that, given your dad, I was wondering if you had any like particular outlook on what we're going to be able to do next weekend, like something that resembles professional volleyball being put out in the U.S., which is a big deal anyway, but especially at this kind of time.
Yeah, I think you're leading right to it. It's the opportunity to play and showcase the highest level of the sport that we have available at this time. I trust in Loy and the whole organization to make the tournament run really safely, and that's the first priority. And it sounds like we're in a spot where we can do that safely. Mm-hmm. So, but after that, then yes, it's an awesome opportunity to just kind of show what sports and sports people are all about, and it's just responding to adversity. And so that's kind of what intrigued me about this tournament too, is getting back out there and being a part of that push. I think is huge, just for sport and for people and whatever they're doing, whatever they're passionate about. And so to get with people who all love the sport and the game, and it's going to be a great time no matter what.
Definitely going to be a great time. There's going to be a lot of good ball play. There's going to be a lot of great people there. And yeah, we've got a pretty cool opportunity for us as a league to put out just a bunch of content for a volleyball world and a sports world at large. It's just kind of starving for it right now. So hopefully
I didn't fully appreciate that either. You're right. That's going to be a really cool thing.
Yeah. So hopefully all the Cody Kessel fans out there will know that you're playing next weekend, and we'll be able to tune in. Everything will be live streamed. Everyone can follow the league on social media. For people who don't know you that well, where can you be followed? Where can they find you?
Yeah, pretty much all my handles are at Cody Kessel, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, you name it. TikTok, but not so much. That's sweet. Yeah, I'll definitely be promoting it. And you have me fired up more than I was about it just from this conversation. So thanks.
Awesome. Mission accomplished.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Cody, thanks so much for taking the time, man. It was great to get to know you and get to know another rising star in the USA volleyball world, and a face that we're going to see a lot next weekend. So we appreciate the time, man, and we will see you next week in Indiana. It's going to be awesome.
Awesome, Rob. Thanks for having me.